High Desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever time of day it may be, where you are, anywhere in the world, which is where we cover with this radio program the entire world, all the time zones. Great to be here. I'm Art Bell. It is a Friday night, Saturday morning, and that means... I don't know what that means. We're going to have open lines. I've got a couple of ideas packed away, but basically, coming up is open lines. Anybody out there know anything about spontaneous human invisibility? Invisibility. That's a subject I want to sort of fool around with tonight a little bit. Let's look quickly at the news, such as it is. With Israel's approval, the Security Council unanimously adopted a U.S. resolution Friday night welcoming a dispatch of a U.N. team to find out what happened in the Jenin refugee camp during a battle that Israel says basically is what happened. You know, it was a crossfire in the battle. But they will go and look. The FBI has publicly warned more than 1,200 banks in the Northeast on Friday of possible terrorist attacks. The unconfirmed information that led to the dramatic alert came in part from Abu Zubaydah, the highest-ranking al-Qaeda terrorist in U.S. custody. Authorities cautioned they had no information about any specific threat, but a U.S. law enforcement source said authorities feared a suicide attack. Well, that sure figures... It figures that what's happening to Israel will eventually begin to occur here. The engineer of a deadly Amtrak crash told investigators that he threw on the emergency brakes just before that train derailed because he saw misaligned tracks ahead. Now, that's interesting because they had just passed over the area in an inspection run without any trouble. So there is a real mystery here. It's like the tracks separated within virtually minutes. Gee, what could have done that? Human action, I suppose. Facing accusations that he protected priests who molested children, Bishop John McCormick has now stepped down as head of the committee developing the Roman Catholic Church's national response to the sex abuse crisis. And then there was this fellow, the pharmacist who admitted watering down the drugs of 34 cancer victims, has now acknowledged he diluted dozens of drugs over the past decade, possibly affecting 4,200 patients. Wow. The U.S. Attorney's Office acknowledged it could not conclusively confirm the claim, but it could certainly impact thousands and thousands of people. Now, you remember yesterday, the story was the Milan plane crash was trouble. I mean, it was engine trouble or, you know, something like that, right? But, in fact, the pilot plane whose plane crashed into Milan's tallest building, killing himself and two women, was a failed businessman who wanted to end his life. Now, that's according to his son, and this is in a foreign, it's in an Italian newspaper. The paper identified the pilot as Luigi Fasulo, who made a fortune in the airplane business, then lost all of it after becoming a self-styled investor. Mm-hmm. He was reported variously as 65 to 67 years old, said to live in Pregosna, a suburb of Lugano, Switzerland, not far from where that flight originated, but he was apparently suicidal, according to his own son. So while it may not have been a terrorist action, it doesn't very much at this point look like engine trouble either. In a moment, I'm going to come back, and when I do, I'm going to tell you some pretty interesting stories about something you may never heard of, or maybe you know a whole lot about it, and I've got a feeling that you do. Collectively, of course, we reach at this time of night millions and millions and millions of people, so some of you may know something about spontaneous human invisibility. Anyway, I have a few stories and a potential guest. Stay right where you are. What you're about to hear came to me on the internet from Donna Higby. Donna Higby is doing an investigation into something that I've been curious about my entire life. A spontaneous human invisibility. As she says, and we're going to try and find Donna Higby, thank you very much, because she sounds like she'd be a very good guest. In the summer of 1994, she says, I became aware of a very strange phenomena, human spontaneous involuntary invisibility, which was apparently happening to people in the U.S. When I checked with other researchers, and I discovered that a number of them had also heard of such cases, so I decided to place an inquiry letter in several well-known journals asking other researchers and the general public if they'd had any experiences of this nature that they'd like to share with me. Besides the publication of my inquiry letter, my inquiry was placed on several internet bulletin boards, and the letters began pouring in, giving me a broader picture of this phenomena. And I'd like to share a few of the stories with you. My inquiry letter told the story of Vera in Ventura, California, who tried to get assistance in a post office. Can you imagine this? Only to be completely ignored by other customers and the postal clerk. Now, I've kept in touch with Vera, and she has had other apparent invisibility experiences in stores and other public places. Sheila in Roanoke, Texas, continues to have invisibility experiences, some of which have occurred in restaurants and at the airport. Glenda in Fort Worth, Texas, has had these experiences occur in a cafeteria and a movie theater. Most of the cases that I have researched have been in the U.S., although I do know of cases in England, Europe, Australia, Puerto Rico, and Brazil. Now, I think she's on to something here, folks, because if somebody, even yourself, were to become invisible, there'd be no story to tell other than yours, would there? Because nobody else saw you. How do we know that people, on occasion, do not spontaneously become virtually invisible? Actually invisible? She goes on, in every case that I've heard of or personally researched, the person is physically still present, although simply unable to be seen or heard. From the point of view of the invisible person, the world looks normal and they've got no idea that they can't be seen or heard by people around them. I'll address how this might occur a little further along in the article, but first, I want to give you a few examples below. The quotes are directly from the experiencers to me. Jean in Tucson, Arizona, wrote me of her experiences. She's had them occur in the library, where she attempted to check out books, and in clothing stores. The following is a quote from her letter, showing the humor with which she deals with these occurrences. I've had this happen in stores, in restaurants, many places. I remember joking to a friend of mine one time that I felt like I could walk into a bank, help myself to a pile of bills, and nobody would ever see me because I was invisible. There is no physical reason why I should be. In fact, I'm taller than average for my sex and age group. I'm 55 years old and 5'9", referred to as good-looking, and I've always worn my hair red. You wouldn't think a tall woman with red hair, high heels, in a purple dress, and dangle earrings would be invisible, would you? No, Jean, I sure wouldn't. Or perhaps the story from a 37-year-old man, Peter, in England, who was at a private party in 1987, walked, get this, upstairs to use the bathroom, and was followed by a woman, you know, who also wanted to use the bathroom. Well, the woman motioned for him to go first. She stood outside the door to wait her turn. So Peter used the bathroom, opened the door, walked out into the hallway, closing the door behind him. He went on down the stairs and walked over to some friends and started talking to them. They all ignored him completely. He thought they were playing a joke on him, so he walked away and found his girlfriend and asked her for a cigarette. She, too, acted like she didn't see or hear him. Now Peter's getting angry and thought the joke had gone too far. So he decided to walk back upstairs and catch the woman coming out of the bathroom and ask her for a cigarette. He says, I walked back up the stairs, and upon reaching the bathroom landing, I came across the girl again, who was standing outside the bathroom door, clearly still waiting for me to come out. When she saw me, her face dropped in surprise, for clearly she thought she was still in the I was still in the bathroom. Peter returned to the party downstairs, and then all of a sudden, everything was normal again. He was able to be seen and heard normally. When he questioned his friends and his girlfriend as to why they had ignored him, all swore they had never seen nor heard him. Obviously, the woman upstairs had not seen him come out of the bathroom and go downstairs. Now comes the case of Melanie in Ventura, California, who became invisible while sitting on her own living room sofa and staring at the wall, lost in her own thoughts. Her husband was walking around the house looking for her, couldn't see her sitting there, just several feet away from where he was walking. Now this lasted for about 10 minutes. Then, suddenly, she was visible again. Her husband was quite upset with her and thought she'd been hiding from him. She assured him that she had been sitting there all along, but to this day, he doesn't believe her. Or how about Janice in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who's had a number of invisibility experiences throughout her life? One reported here lasted longer than usual. As a teenager, she fell in with a group of friends who decided to see if they could actually steal something from a department store and not get caught. Well, as luck would have it, the entire group was caught and taken into custody, including Janice. They were taken to the police station, and one by one they were questioned, all that is, except Janice. Although she was standing right there, no one paid the slightest attention to her, not the police, the guards, or the office personnel. She finally just got up and walked out of the police station without ever being questioned or anyone attempting to stop her. When she later talked with her friends about what happened at the police station, they didn't recall me being taken into custody at the department store, yet I rode in the police car with everyone else, and they thought I was still at the store. No one had seen her from the moment the police had arrived on the scene in the store until sometime after she had walked out of the police station unhindered. What is happening? Why is this occurring? How? We don't have any answers for these questions yet, but in trying to learn more about invisibility, I came across some information that I wanted to share with you. And she goes on, she begins to do some research on all of this, and I've got quite a bit on that. So I guess my first question to you is this woman really on to something? Is this another one of those events that appears to be occurring right now that we have no explanation for? So I'm wondering, we're going to do several things, actually, here tonight. We're going to do something on mirrors. I had a call, as you know, earlier in the week, a fascinating call, with regard to experiences with a mirror. Now, there are several researchers doing work right now on communication with the dead with the use of a mirror in a very special room, and having a significant amount of success with that. So there's something going on with mirrors, and so tonight, obviously, I would like to ask you about a couple of things right away. One would be the question about a mirror, whether you've had any unusual experience with a mirror, and the other, of course, regarding human invisibility. And then I've got a third. The third is the following. I thought it was a pretty good idea. Gary in Berkeley sends it. Art, in light of your interview this week with Red Elk, I'd like to suggest a topic for tonight's Open Lines. along with the mirror topic that you intend to do, I've heard, my idea is to invite anyone to call in who spent time in the underworlds, caves, tunnels, caverns, and has seen things and heard things in there, found things in there, things outside the norm, beings, tracks, noises. I think you might get some interesting responses, and so I'm open for that. Believe me, I'm open for that. So if anybody has any underground experience, I mean, we hear from people like Red Elk and others that there may be levels of worlds below ours, below the surface, worlds that we don't have the slightest sense about. Pretty interesting stuff. Anybody have any clues? Anybody been in a mine or a very, very deep hole and found anything or heard anything that you cannot or could not at the time explain? So that's a plenty, I think, of grist for the mill. Let's go all the way to Chicago and say hello to Sandy. Sandy, hello.
Hey, how you doing out there?
I'm doing all right. You are in Chicago?
Yes, I am. This is WLS 890 in Chicago.
Oh, the monster, world's largest store. And, you know, after that, they could have called it the world's largest station, because it just about is. Anyway, tell me your story, your experience with the mirror, Sandy.
Well, I was talking to my friend one day, and I was just telling an experience I had. I was in the bathroom one day, and kind of washing up and everything, and start reflecting, you know, on things, and just was trying to put some things together about what next moves I was going to make in life and financial.
I do that in the shower.
Yeah.
Really, it's my time to think. I sit there with the water beating on my head and think. So, you know, people do that sort of thing in different places. For you, I guess it was a mirror, huh?
Well, I was grooming myself in the mirror, and I was just started reflecting. I was just talking to myself, just kind of role-playing with myself.
Even admiring yourself, perhaps. My
if you will.
God, I look good here. Look at me. Yeah?
If you will. So I just happened to look down at my face and, my shoulders and everything. I was wiping my shoulders and everything off with my towel. And just happened to look back up in the mirror, and I wasn't looking at myself.
What? You mean you saw yourself? Do you think it was like from a few seconds before, or in some pose that you had never been in at all? I mean, you saw yourself not looking at yourself. Holy moly! Was it a previous image or what?
I would know. That's what I'm. You know, that's what I was asking my friend. I was like, well, wow. You know, I was telling him. I said, man, could that have been?
Okay, the first thing anybody would do is move. So.
Right.
I take it you moved and the image in the mirror did not?
Well, when I looked up, my eyes were still placed on my shoulders and my chest area. And then when I caught it, my eyes being caught.
Sandy, hold on, Sandy. Can you stay on the line?
Yes, I can.
All right, we're going into a break, so stay on the line. So, in other words, when he caught his image in the mirror, not reflecting as it should have properly, suddenly it's like there was a glitch and it caught up. Oh, that's kind of cool. What do you think happened to Sandy? So that's our first mirror story. That and invisibility, I'm very interested. Anybody with any stories out there? We'll be right back.
George Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
So, let's give this a try. If anybody out there has any experience with invisibility, man, is that an interesting topic. Invisibility. Is there a lot of that going on out there? Actual invisibility? Let's see how many are out there, shall we? Things encountered under the ground in holes, deep holes, caves, whatever. Be very interested to any cavers out there have any stories. Of course, mirrors. And anybody with experience, just like Sandy, what an experience with a mirror. We're going to hear more about that in a moment. Stay right where you are. Now, the more I hear from Sandy, the creepier. This really is creepy. I mean, can you imagine looking at yourself in the mirror and seeing yourself frozen? It's like you caught the mirror freezing you, and the moment that your mirror self realized that it wasn't mirroring you, it caught up with you. It sounds like that's exactly, you were just sitting there admiring your extraordinary self, and that's what happened?
Yes, sir.
And as soon as you noticed that it was a frozen image, that the eyes weren't looking as your eyes were, then it suddenly, how quickly did it catch up to you?
Then the eyes looked up, and...
The eyes looked up?
Yes,
That's very creepy.
And then I popped out of this, like, trance-like state, and I had, like, ghost pimples. I was like, whoa.
That would utterly, totally do me in. Sandy, thank you. I'm expecting we're going to hear, that was Sandy in Chicago, we're going to hear probably more like that. That would utterly, completely creep me out. Can you imagine, turn around, there you are, right? But the eyes are looking down or something, and then as you watch in the mirror, the eyes look, they come up to you. Ay, ay, ay. That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. That would do me. On the first time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
This is Eric from St. Paul.
How you doing, Eric? St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yep.
Okay. What's
all
up?
Right. I got a mirror story and
a mirror story.
A couple of plasma ball stories. If you want to hear those, but the mirror story is much better.
No, just give that to me.
Okay. About 5 years ago, I sat out on the porch and I smoked a joint, and then I went upstairs and I sat in front of the mirror. And I sat there for about 2 minutes.
Were you thinking that smoking the joint... In other words, were you actually doing some sort of experiment?
No,
you were
no
just,
experiment.
You were just getting stoned,
yeah.
And then you went upstairs, happened to go upstairs. Okay, I just wanted to make sure it wasn't planned.
No plans at all.
Okay.
Just staring in the mirror, you know, sometimes you do that when you're high. And after about 2 minutes, it just started turning into like a slideshow. And I was watching hundreds of faces flashed through the mirror, like, about 4 a second, and they were all crystal clear pictures. Couldn't, you know, analyze them or anything, but...
Well, you know, everybody out there knows that marijuana is a mild hallucinogen.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that before.
I know, but you're telling that story that way, adding the fact that you smoked pot first.
Well, I wasn't going to lie and just say it wasn't.
Well, I appreciate that.
Okay, well, I don't think there was anything in the weed besides that.
Besides weed?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so you saw like a multitude of your faces?
No, there were men, women, most of them were Asian, some were retarded, really deformed faces, and
oh.
I just sat there and watched it like a movie.
Oh.
For about 2 minutes, and then it stopped, and it was me again. And
don't you remember thinking... Something like
they were my past lives or something.
I mean, yeah, but I know. But didn't it just scare the hell out of you? It would me.
I thought it was kind of funny.
You thought it was funny?
Yeah.
Well,
that lady on Friday, that last caller that was talking about past lives.
Yes.
after the fact of that, like years after that, I've been trying that in the mirror, except with, she said there was like a light to her side. I just focus at my face at a certain way, and I do that same thing she's talking about, except it's not like a crystal clear picture. It's more like some weird energy being staring at me. Sometimes it's an old man. It's like bright yellow, dark, you know. It's like an energy being. I don't know what it is.
Okay. I appreciate the story. Thank you. All right. Well, now, oh, my. So, other than the pot part, you know, which is going to disqualify that story for a lot of people, I know, and I appreciate his truthfulness. I don't think pot generally puts on shows for you in mirrors. But you never know. People's metabolism is different. So a lot of people are going to scratch that one off, toss it straight into at least the gray box and say, no, because of the pot. Nevertheless, very, 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 very interesting. Wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, Howard.
Hi.
Yes, this is Roger in Phoenix.
Yes, sir.
I've been having a certain experience. Let me preface my remarks by saying I think this is happening to more and more people as the shadow people are happening. But I believe that this is becoming quite a commonplace experience. I was in a store just recently, 2 days ago, in fact. I was trying to get the clerk's attention. And I could not get the clerk's attention.
You mean like you weren't even there?
Well, yes. I believe that I was becoming literally, psychologically invisible to the people about me, at least the clerks.
Yep.
And I was doing anything that I could to attract the attention of this clerk. Now, I think that this is having more and more people, ordinary people, every day. And I think that it's happening in public more than anywhere else. I literally had to pinch myself to make sure that I was there.
Huh. Did you note when it ended? In other words, was there an apparent time when it ended and all of a sudden you were back to normal?
Well, it's continued until I arrived home. I looked in the mirror and there I was. So I was actually existing. But what I'm saying is that I felt visible in public places, and I found that this is also true in for instance, public offices, you know, we're trying to...
But you just don't think you're a nondescript person, do you? In other words...
Well, this could very well be the problem, but I consider myself rather colorful. See, this is the problem.
I see.
I've never had this until quite recently. It's been happening regularly and increasingly over the past several years.
But earlier in your life, people had no problem recognizing you there?
Well, I can't say that I was always recognized or even acknowledged in my presence registered. But I think that as I'm getting older, I mean, I don't know if it's nondescript. I'm British, of course, and I tend to be somewhat of a conformist, but rather eccentric nonetheless. And I just feel that I'm becoming more and more invisible in public spaces.
Well, I would notice you, sir. All right, thank you very much. This whole thing is very, very, very interesting. In fact, the author of this article, Donna Higby, again, I've sent this up to the network and said, let's see if we can find Donna. Went and studied some manuscripts which talk about surrounding yourself with a shroud, which is described as looking like, in quotes, a cloud. It is said that Madame Blavatsky of the Theosophical Society witnessed this invisibility for herself and was actually given the secret, thereafter accomplishing this for herself on several occasions and in front of witnesses. The literature on the spiritualists in the U.S. shows there is no doubt that they, too, knew about the cloud and its creation. So what is this cloud? We are looking, apparently, for something that is between empty space and actual physical matter. In between, did you hear that? Something unseen by the naked eye, but very much in existence. The Rosicrucian Manual tells us that the first form into which spirit essence concentrates preparatory to material manifestation is electrons. When spiritual essence gathers into a very minute focal points of electrical charge due to certain conditions, we have the creation of electrons. Science reports that such a cloud of free electrons will absorb all light entering it. And it goes on. Do you see now why I'm asking about this? I think that Donna Higby, wherever she may be, has really stumbled, obviously, onto something here. Wouldn't that be fun to try if you knew the secret of the creation of the cloud? I mean, to be invisible, imagine that. Actually, of course, if it occurred spontaneously, which apparently it frequently does, there is a secret to doing it willfully, but if it occurred spontaneously, it would totally freak you out, right? Like the people in the story. But if you knew how to do it, and you could willfully do it, oh my, the mischief you could... You see, that's the first thing I think about, right? The mischief you could get into. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello? Hello, East of the Rockies.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
I wasn't sure if it was me.
That's you.
My name is Mary. I live outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay.
And when I was a little girl, I remember several times my father would come looking for me, and I would wish in my mind that he couldn't see me.
Right.
He would walk right by me, close enough for me to touch his leg.
And he wouldn't see you.
He did not see me.
That's so
I got in big trouble. He accused me of hiding.
But you weren't, you were what, standing
No, I was sitting on the ground, and he walked right by me. We lived on a farm. And this happened more than one time, and each time...
And you believe that you willed it.
I believe I willed it, because each time I would, in my mind, say, I don't want him to see me.
God, that's weird.
It may be
that... how old were you at the time, do you recall?
Probably about 3 or 4.
3 or 4. Maybe it's something that's inherent in us, and maybe we can actually do that. Until we sort of unlearn it and forget it, like a lot of other things.
I think it's easier to do than people realize, because even now, if I really don't want someone to see me, they don't. It's kind of neat when you're driving.
Have you ever really, when you're driving?
Yeah.
So you mean like they wouldn't see you, or they wouldn't see the car?
The car. I've sped past cops. Just say, oh, I hope he doesn't see me, and he doesn't.
You could go speeding past cops?
I've gone 70 and a 50, and I didn't get pulled over.
You've got to be kidding.
I don't know what else it could be.
You know what my experience is? I'll give you an honesty. I'll tell you how invisible I am. Here I am going down the highway, and this cop is doing, I think the speed limit was, 60, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, you know, I got in the left-hand lane, and I just slowly started passing him. I mean, I couldn't have been doing more than 61 or 2 miles an hour. And I finally got past him, and I turned the right signal on, and he puts on the bubble lights, man, pulls me over. And you know, he said, how stupid is that, passing a cop doing the speed limit? I said, yeah, but I was just barely passing. He said, I don't care. I'm an officer of the law, and you passed me. Here.
Oh.
And he gave me a ticket.
That's not fun.
No, I'm not. But you can do 70 and a 50, go right past a cop, no problem?
I've been able to do it more than one time. And apparently, I can do that when someone else is driving, too. Because my husband has a really heavy lead foot.
Yeah, well.
And if I see the cop, I'll say, oh, I hope he don't see us. And
it works.
It's worked.
You're a very valuable person. Have you ever... So you've consciously tested this theory many, many times since you were a child.
And I just thought everybody could do this.
No. As I just told you, not me. Thank you.
I bet you could.
On the other side of the coin is I've never actively tried...
I didn't realize that I was doing something unusual.
But just in case it wouldn't work for me, I don't think I'd try it passing a cop.
Well, I don't do it intentionally, but when I see them... Now, if I don't see them first, they get me.
So, in other words, you've got to be concentrating on the thought of not being seen in order for it to work, right?
Correct.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I've never had it happen spontaneously. But when I don't want to be seen, I'm not seen.
That is absolutely cool. Thank you.
No problem.
Take care. See, I told you I knew we were onto something here, or to be fair, Donna Higbee's obviously onto something. When I saw this, I thought, you know, here's a lady who at a microcosm level, compared to what I'm able to do on the air here, has stumbled, has done exactly what I have done so many times on the air, and that is stumble into something that's real and ongoing and actually common, even though totally bizarre. I mean, Twilight Zone all the way, right? Except it's happening. And she stumbled straight into it, and so obviously she would make a very good guest. Well, I don't know if she'd make a good guest. She probably would. She's done all the research on this. So we'll try and find her. But in the meantime, we would seem to be in the process of confirming her early research. So this is, to me, this is something totally new. Invisibility, I mean, consider the possibilities. Oh, consider the possibilities of being invisible. And by the way, I wasn't kidding about that story of... I just crawled past that cop. I thought, you know, sure, most cops are going to give you a 5-mile-per-hour speed limit leeway, right? And most cops do, but not this one. Man, I went by him so slowly, I could have reached out and held on to his, you know, his, like, the rear car door for a second, and then the front car door for a few seconds. You know, I mean, I was just barely crawling by. But that was it. The minute I got out, got in the same lane, he throws on his lights. Annoyed that I would dare to sneak by 1 mile per hour faster than he was going. Those were his words. He handed me this thing, said, never pass cop. Do the speed limit. Never. Yes, sir. Thank you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Kelly. I'm from Washington State.
Hi, Kelly. What's up?
Well, the first night you had anything about mirrors, you had a woman call in about past lives.
Yes.
Well, have you heard of scrying?
I have heard of it, yes.
Well, that's what... I went through a period of time where I was obsessive about finding out about past lives.
And?
And some people told me how to scry using a mirror.
And how do you do it?
What you do... well, what they told me, you take a source of light, usually a candle because it's relaxing, and you put it off to the side and the rest of the room is dark and you look into a mirror. And if you want to know something about past lives, you just... You say that out loud, that you want to learn about past lives, and then
really?
you concentrate into the mirror. And so that's what I was doing. And
what exactly did you see?
Well, at first I didn't see anything, but then once I got relaxed, I started to see myself turn into a man. It was like a picture, but it was not very clear. The man was taller than me. He had a lot of facial hair, and he was dark. But above my head...
How old are you?
I'm 16.
You're a 16-year-old girl?
Yes.
And you became an older man?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, but...
How did this appear to you? Did it appear like a portrait or a simple reflection in the mirror, or were you... Was it like you were looking into a movie, or what?
It was like a reflection in the mirror, but it was very blurry. I couldn't make out a lot of facial features.
Okay.
It was, you know, it was almost like you might describe seeing something in a dream. You can see it, but not totally clear.
Okay.
Okay. And so I saw these red flashing lights above my head. And at first, I didn't know what they were. I was trying to ignore them because I wanted to concentrate on the past life. I wanted to see what was there.
You had not smoked pot, right?
No, I had not.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And so, but these lights kept flashing, and so I let them distract me. I looked up, I was distracted, and I think the reason I was distracted is because I was expecting that they were actually there in the room, not in the mirror.
Oh.
And so, as soon as I was distracted, I lost the image.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it took that level of concentration to allow it to manifest itself, and the second you let go of that, boom, it was gone?
Well, I don't know. I think it was more relaxation than concentration.
Okay. But you were obviously in an altered state.
Yeah.
Better way to put it. You were in an altered state, and the second you snapped out of that altered state, boom, it was gone.
Yes, and so I tried to concentrate again. I started making myself relax again. And as soon as I did this, as soon as I started to see a picture again, it's like something inside of me, not really a clear voice, but just something in my head, kind of said to me, do you really want to be shown this? And
listen, dear.
Yeah?
Hold on. We're at the top of an hour, and I've got a break for the news. So let's do that, and I'll bring you back, okay?
Okay.
Okay, hold tight. A voice is yet. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM, rocking through the nighttime.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Absolutely fascinating stuff. We're talking about spontaneous... Actually, no. We're talking about invisibility. Sometimes spontaneous and sometimes willful, apparently. Continuing, Donna Higby says, science reports that such a cloud of free electrons, this cloud she's talking about, will absorb all light entering it. It will not reflect nor refract light waves, nor are light waves able to pass through a human being. Consequently, the observer's eye sees nothing there, and the person surrounded by such a cloud is, in fact, invisible, since light is necessary for human sight. When there are no reflected or refracted light waves bouncing off a person and hitting the observer's retina, the person is not able to be seen and is not visible under normal circumstances. We'll be right back. All right. Once again, back to our caller. And caller, you said that a voice then said to you, "Do you want? Essentially, do you want to proceed?" Is that correct?
Yes. Well, first, I'd like to clarify. I've never done drugs, and I don't drink alcohol.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Well, actually, it was more like my subconscious kind of, you know, it wasn't actually a voice, like an audible voice, just something inside of me said, are you sure you want to see this?
Uh-huh.
And immediately after I heard that, I thought, I'm not sure. And as soon as I thought that, the candle blew out.
The candle blew out?
Yes.
And the image was gone?
Yeah, but, yeah. The image, I started to get an image, and that's when I heard that, and when I said, I'm not sure, the candle blew out. And, you know, since I was in a dark room, the candle blew out, I freaked out, ran out of the room.
Have you ever since? How long ago was this?
Oh, maybe a year ago.
A year ago. Have you ever thought of trying it again?
Yeah, I tried it again once.
Oh?
But nothing happened. I was too distracted. Too much was going on, so I just couldn't relax, couldn't concentrate, so nothing happened.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm with you. I would have ended it. I might have ended it long before you did. Going back into the altered state a second time was pretty gutsy, I would say.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Take care. Mirrors. a second very lively topic. Pretty strange stuff, huh? What do you think it is about mirrors? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, how are you? Mike in Tempe.
Mike, hi.
Hi, I wanted to clue you and your audience in on something they can do. It has to do with mirrors and feedback loops. Basically, everyone knows how you hold a mirror up to a mirror and you see through the tunnel to infinity. And if you can do the same thing, you hook a camera, a video camera up to a television and film the television, you get the same effect.
You get a million images of you holding the camera.
Right, or not even you holding a camera. You can just zoom it in enough to all you see is the tunnel.
That's right. A big, long, endlessly repeated millions of tunnels.
You are connected to infinity at that point.
And you know, that's a fascinating concept. You are connected to infinity at that point. You are connected to infinity. You're right. And another thing, have you ever noticed this? That when you have the camera there, if you move the camera to the left or to the right, the long tunnel of endlessly repeating images you'll see the curve in the tunnel.
Yeah, yeah. Now
that is totally awesome.
Oh, it is. It's a great effect, and not only connect infinity. If you roll tape while you're doing this, play it back and capture still frames. You will see some of the most incredible imagery. And I'm not just talking, a cool-looking graphic, but I'm talking faces, entities, and anyone with a camera and a monitor can try this.
Ho, my friend, hold on. Have you captured any of these still images and kept them?
Oh, yeah, sure have.
Oh, you just happen to have them, do you?
Yeah, sure do.
Oh, gee, how about emailing me a couple?
You bet, that's not a problem.
Really?
Yeah.
Go to your computer and do it forthwith.
I sure will, and I encourage everyone to try it because it's really incredible.
Oh well, you're probably dead right on. You do at that moment have a connection with infinity, and maybe that opens a door to all kinds of things, and it not only explains the mirrors, but it becomes intensified or magnified. Doing the kind of thing you're talking about.
After we started doing this, me and a couple of my buddies, we started seeing UFOs. We started filming UFOs.
What? What? Really?
Oh, yes. It opens you up to a lot of weird stuff. So if you want to get opened up and experience the weirdness that you can in this lifetime, do it up. Because it definitely brings about...
How long have you been doing this?
Almost 10 years now.
10 years?
Yeah, not focusing just on the monitor filming, the connection to infinity, but...
Have you published any of your work?
Published? Well, I've had a lot of stuff on different websites. I've been involved in the paranormal realm with a lot of people. I've done book covers for New York Times bestselling authors, and...
Really?
Oh, yeah, I've met just about, I've met a lot of people in the field, and...
So when you do that, for example, what you talked about with the camera and the monitor, and I've played with that a million times, it's so fascinating.
It is.
But I've never tried to capture images and then look for things within. What if you want to hazard a guess about what you're seeing? I mean, if you see a craft or a face or a person or an image, what do you think you're seeing? Do you think you're seeing through time, space? Dimensions? What?
Probably all of the above. It's probably different for each person. Each person experiences their own reality, and they bring to it, to bring to the table whatever they have. Whatever's in them, whatever is around them, could be multidimensional. It's up in the air, but it's definitely something. Definitely something.
Send me your best examples. I'll get them on my website quickly.
Okay, I sure will.
Just put in the header so that I know. I get so much email.
Right.
Put in the header infinity images.
Okay.
So I know what it is, all right?
Will do, Art.
All right, thank you, and take care. Oh, isn't that ever interesting? He's so right about that. And I'm so right about the other aspect of it that's so interesting is to move out from the center, either up, down, left, or right, or actually at any angle from center, you begin to bend the infinite images, the infinite, the whole thing, the whole. It's like a giant tunnel of images, and it bends, doesn't it? Fascinating. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art, you know, people should be aware that playing around with mirrors might be in the same category as playing around with a Ouija board.
It might.
A lot of this stuff sounds like the exact same experiences that people have with Ouija boards, so people might want to think twice. They might bite off a little more than they can chew.
They might want to think 10 times. But boy, it's interesting.
Well, yeah, but it's just, you know, people, be careful.
Now, did you hear what the man just said about the video camera?
Yeah, I've seen that type of an effect before.
I mean, most people have, but I think there is a relationship to what he just said and the effect of mirrors as well.
You? It's all the same stuff.
All the same stuff, yes. Except perhaps when you do it with video, you enhance the effect even further, and maybe you're getting a look across some kind of barrier, and to be able to get a still image of that, pretty cool.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Ouija boards, all that might be the same stuff. But anyway, onto the subject of red elk and inner earth and holes in the ground and stuff.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, you know, in the book of Revelation, when the fifth trumpet, when the fifth angel blows his trumpet,
yes,
a hole opens in the ground.
From which
locusts with scorpion-type stingers on them come out.
Yeah.
And their job is not to attack trees and plants, but to attack people for 5 months. And I would be curious what Red Elk has to say about what these things might be.
To attack people for 5 months.
That's what it says. They're not going to attack the trees and the plants like they would normally do, but they're going to go after people for 5 months. These are creatures coming out of the earth. Now, people might say, well, this is all figurative language.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Let's say it's literal.
Yeah.
All right? How do you think the modern world today, now, would react to that occurrence? If biblical prophecy began to unfold, and here's this whole, and these locust things come out and begin attacking people, how do you think modern society would react to that? Number one, we'd call in the military.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And we'd have a locust war. If necessary, we'd nuke the locusts.
Probably. They'd probably react the exact same way that they did back during the plagues, you know, in Pharaoh's time and all that, with Moses and all that. But the point is,
in science fiction movies, the locusts would eat the nuke up and get bigger.
Well, maybe. But the point is, if things are as bad as they're going to be, as it says it's going to be in the book of Revelation, I think this situation is going to be so chaotic. You know, the locusts are just going to be one more bad thing in a whole pot of bad things.
Yeah, well, it would be a doozer.
Yeah, so
no question. I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you. Very interesting. But again, think about it. How would modern society react to a biblical or biblically prophesized event literally coming true? Huh? A giant hole beginning to spew locusts all over the world, which then got big and attacked people. There'd be a human locust war. The United Nations would convene. We would talk about the use of nuclear weapons and all sorts of things. That would be the modern response. You know, back in the old biblical times, there'd be no defense, right? People would just, locusts would carry them away. Today, we've got nukes. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Great show, as always.
Interesting, anyway.
Yes, it is. My name is Tom, calling, actually, I'm from Skinny Atlas, New York, but tonight, traveling to Chicago. I'm just about 30 miles north of Green Bay.
Okay.
And listening on the radio here, I'd like to talk about the invisibility thing.
Let's rock.
Now, if you recall, during President Bush's inauguration, as he was walking to his presidential limousine, a gentleman came out of the crowd and handed him an item, a coin.
I remember, yes.
Now, this gentleman is claiming that he has invisibility powers.
That's
to recall
right.
This.
Yes, I do.
That's
and,
right.
And by God, he got by all of the Secret Service, and they don't have they didn't have a clue how he did it, and he claimed he was invisible. You're absolutely right. He's done that with not just this president, but I believe several others.
Yes, that's what I was going to get to next. He also did it with President Clinton. Now, think about it. If this guy didn't have this power, then, I mean, he got through the first time. You would think they'd be watching for him again, right? Wouldn't he be on that list of possibility,
big time,
to the president?
Big time, sir.
So how is it that he does it a second time? There we go with a documented point. I mean, we got video and cameras everywhere. It'd be amazing to really sit back and look at the video and see when he actually appeared. I mean, it's got to be a boom right then and there.
That's incredible. That's right. I had forgotten entirely about that story, and I sort of laughed it off at the time. But he said that he could make himself invisible.
That's right. Now, think about it. With all those cameras, I mean, isn't that an amazing thing? We could go back. I'm quite sure we can get some stock footage, look at it. And it would be really interesting to see right when he, boom, appears right there. We can see it all.
You've got a good point. If the cameras were on that part of the crowd, it would be very interesting to examine it frame by frame and see if suddenly in the crowd, past the lines where he should have been and all the people protecting the president, he just suddenly sort of pops into a frame.
Yeah,
I wonder if anybody's actually gone back and studied that.
That's really cool, yeah. Maybe somebody who has, they can call in and check it out. Another thing you were talking about is the mirrors.
Oh, yeah.
And with crossing over, contacting people.
Yeah, you heard the guy with the video camera angle, right?
Yeah, and I have a degree in television production, and when he said about the seeing the images in there, if you do it and you look close, now I have all Super VHS equipment. Now with the HDTV equipment, it's even higher resolution.
In fact, so high that you would be looking so much further into infinity.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, certainly.
And in my own experiences with the mirrors, in my own house is haunted, and it is amazing how many times that, I'll be getting ready, grooming myself, and I'll look in the mirror, and bam, isn't there somebody standing right there? And you turn around, there's nobody there.
Swear to me this is true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My wife has seen it. I have seen it. Her mother has seen it. As a matter of fact, the home that I live in has been in my wife's family for nearly 100 years. Her father was actually born in that house,
and
he passed away in that house.
Can you describe the image that you see or have
yes.
seen?
As a matter of fact, the image that we have seen many, many times is of my deceased father-in-law. And it's not a clear-cut image. It's
outline. You know that to be true from photographs or, I don't know, whatever?
I knew him personally before he passed on.
Okay.
And what's really amazing is there are times that you could smell he would wear the grease in his hair. It's more like a Vaseline. And it's just her and I in the house now. It's a very large home, 3,000 square feet, just her and I.
You can also smell it.
And you would smell it. It is amazing. And then there's other doors. I can go on and on about some really neat things that have happened.
This look into infinity, whether it's a mirror and a partial look into infinity, or it's something, a little fancier like that man described, either way, it may be that you're opening a door.
And I believe so. I believe so. I believe the other side does try to come back and contact us and warn us about things and tell us about things and also even pat us on the back when we're not feeling that good.
Sir, the other side, it kind of stands to reason. The other side is infinite.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah,
great show.
Take care. Maybe the other side is infinite. and perhaps the pathway to infinity is at least partially achieved with a mirror, and perhaps, as he pointed out, with ever higher definition, the pathway, the tunnel, if you want to call it a tunnel to infinity, is longer and ever so much more clear. Any way you look at it, it's an absolutely fascinating topic, isn't it? Anybody else on this? Good morning, I'm Art Bell.
I've been where the eagle flies, rode his wings across autumn skies, kissed the sun, touched the moon, but he left me much too soon. His ladybird, he left his ladybird. Lady Bird, come on down, I'm here waiting on the ground. Lady Bird, I'll treat you good, ah, Lady Bird, I wish you
Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Bill in the state of Illinois says, I agree, your callers are playing with fire. It's in capitals. Looking into mirrors, Ouija boards, and so forth. People are biblically illiterate and will follow the Antichrist thinking he is Jesus. It is written in capital letters. Fire players. This, the author Donna Higby of this article goes on, interestingly. How is this cloud created intentionally? It's difficult to say. There are references to and descriptions of invisibility and its creation in the writings of secret societies, but most people don't have any access to these writings. One could go to India, and become an apprentice of a student of an Indian guru, or perhaps a teacher to learn these techniques, but that probably is not practical in modern life. To the everyday person, the knowledge of how invisibility works is a mystery. With that being the case, just how are people having experiences of spontaneous, involuntary invisibility? I wish I had the answers. You're still in the midst of our research. Indeed, they are forming the light-absorbing free electron cloud around themselves. They're doing it unknowingly and without knowledge of the methods. Some kind of focused mental thought process must be employed to make the cloud form around oneself. Then it might be that these people are doing this unconsciously. At the start of my research, I was interested to see if there was a correlation between human invisibility and people who report having experiences with non-human entities. It is known that invisibility is one of the components making up the abduction phenomena. The first several people who came to me with invisibility experiences were abductees, and I hope to show a link between abduction and human invisibility. And it goes on. You know, I've often said we own the night. I mean, we are here in the nighttime hours, right? And as it was once said, that sleep is a little slice of death, it may well be that nighttime is a little slice of invisibility. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
Fine.
And where are you?
I'm in Chicago.
Chicago's hot tonight.
Yeah, I heard earlier someone was calling from Chicago.
Okay.
Well, this is about invisibility, and I was at a party. This was New Year's Eve, year 2000.
Big one.
And it happened, it's very unusual, it happened at midnight. And there were a group of about 10 or 12 of us at this party, and we were in the kitchen, and I was talking to the hostess's brother.
Right.
We were standing against the wall and just chatting, and I was about a foot away from him, no more than that. And people were taking pictures, and someone took our picture while we were talking. It was with a Polaroid.
Right.
And we kept talking. I didn't pay too much attention to what the picture was turning out like. But when the picture got developed, I wasn't even aware it was already developed. I heard a commotion around the table, kitchen table.
Yes.
And everyone was going, "Oh my God, I can't believe this. I can't believe this." And
what?
They kept saying my name. So I turned around and I said, "What's going on?" And Sarolta, who was a friend of mine, who was the hostess of the party, and I was standing talking to her brother, said, "You're not in the picture. You disappeared." I said, "Come on." And I thought they were joking.
Yeah.
And they said, "No." And they were all dead serious. Their mouths were hanging open. And I went over and looked, and I said, "Oh, my God, I wasn't there." You could see the wall behind me.
Did anybody, most specifically the person having the conversation with you, notice that anything at the time when the picture was snapped?
No, but there is one unusual thing that I don't know if this has anything to do with it or not. No one noticed me disappearing. I was just not there on the photograph. It was a big space where I was supposed to, you know, just empty space, and he was talking to this empty space with the wall.
In other words, everything was there as it should have been in the photograph,
right.
The wall and whatever
right.
You normally would have blocked by being there.
Right. The only thing that we thought it might have been is I collect antiques, and I had purchased a ring, and this ring is, I got it from an archaeologist, and it's close to about 2,000 years old. And it was dug up in Europe in a place called Moesia at one time. I don't, somewhere in Europe.
Okay.
The ring has unusual symbols on it. It's bronze. And I don't know what these symbols are. We thought maybe it had something to do with the ring. We weren't sure.
Well, have you had any other experiences while wearing that ring?
No, I haven't, not while wearing that ring. But I was never photographed before wearing the ring either. So.
Have
and
you...
I turned out in all the other photographs, just not
okay.
This one. And this was right at midnight.
Right at 2000.
Yeah.
Interesting story. Well, stick around. Take care. That would be a little unnerving if somebody came up with a Polaroid and snapped a picture of you and somebody else, only the space where you were supposed to be is totally empty in the photograph. Mm. Wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Hi, how are you and where are you?
Good, this is Lisa in Upper Michigan.
All right, Lisa.
And I have a theory that some of this might have to do with time travel because I have all of my four children are all gifted in some way because we're from Irish seers on one side and medicine people on the other side. So you get a handful there, right?
Sure.
And my middle daughter was always a little afraid of her talents, and so we didn't encourage her in anything. And she had moved away. She'd just gotten married, and she was living in an old Victorian down in LaGrange, Illinois. And I was kind of hesitant for her living in an old place because she really liked to, she would have liked to have gone back to the Victorian times anyway.
Uh-huh.
Well, one morning, I called her to see how she was doing, and there was no answer, and she always promptly picked up the phone. So I was really worried, like, where could she be? And if I was there, she probably wouldn't have been there. But then, later on, she called me and she was crying and really upset. And I said, what's the matter, honey? And she said, well, Mom, you know, Tom got up and went to work and I went back to sleep and I heard some noises outside. So I got up and I looked out the window and she said, what I had heard was clip-clopping like on Mackinac Island, you know, horses. And she said the street was full of horses and carriages and people were dressed in the old-fashioned way.
Holy mackerel.
And my phone was missing and my alarm clock was missing and I was so scared.
In other words, all the things,
moved.
All the modern things mm-hmm. were gone.
And she had slipped back into time and she didn't know how to get out of that little loop she was in. And so she just got back under the covers and cried herself back to sleep and then she woke up a couple of times, still heard it, and then the third time she woke up, the ambient noise was different. And so she right away reached up and the phone was there and she grabbed it and she called me. Now this happened one other time with her.
Oh, that's incredible.
And so I said, you've got to get out of the old house. You're slipping back into that timeline and you mustn't do that. You've got to get into a new house where there's nothing there, no doors to open. And she knew about the doors and that because we had talked about there's an elderly Indian friend of ours, a relative that is keeper of some doors up here in this area. And has had to shut a few because every once in a while some people fooling around with mirrors and stuff, they open a door and then these other dimensional things can come out and they mess with the other elementals that are supposed to be where they are, like the little people in that. So he has to get them back and shut the door. So she knew about stuff like that and she did move and didn't have the problem again. And so
I suppose somebody at that level, a medicine man, probably has a lot of disdain for people who toy around with this kind of thing, eh?
It makes a lot of extra work, and I've helped him on a few things where people have done that. But in this one particular time, I didn't see the creatures that he was dealing with, but he threw them against by the song and the chant that he was doing and the drumming that someone else was doing.
Yes.
He threw them against the clay bank, and we all of us saw the imprint of the extra-dimensional creature.
Oh, 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 oh.
And, you know, and then he smoothed the clay over and trapped them again and shut the door. You can't really see these doors, but you can, you know how heat looks on a road where it kind of like
shimmers up?
Yeah, that's kind of like what it looks like. When you see one of these things, you can even walk by it, you know. So you should really be careful with these things.
I've got you. I'm with you all the way there.
And the cloud, you can do the cloud. You could learn it. You yourself could learn it. But then the cloud starts to get stronger than you are if you do it too much or you don't do it right. And then, you know.
So you know about this cloud.
Oh, yeah. It's when you get into all of these, like Rosicrucian or whatever, or if you go into the Medewin, which is our secret society, all these teachings are the same. The higher you go, the closer together you come in the teachings.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Art.
Good morning. Well, I guess I had to look into the Rosicrucians a little bit, huh? So the cloud is more than just sketchy knowledge. People know about this. Hmm? More interesting by the moment. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Art.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Missouri.
Missouri, okay.
Yeah, I was listening to you Friday night, and you had a fellow on there that said he could travel out of time. He could stop time.
Stop time. Yes, we talked about that last week a little bit. He claimed he could stop, literally stop time, like in an old Twilight Zone where everything freezes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I tried desperately to call in that night. I listen to you every night. I'm a longtime listener. My dad turned me on to your show.
Are you telling me you've done this or you know somebody who does?
I do. I don't do it on purpose. It just seems to happen. It's like a real... I get real dizzy and everything's real hazy.
And you can stop?
Yeah, things just all of a sudden stop and I get a head rush.
Yeah.
And while things are stopped, I've developed kind of a habit of fooling around while things are stopped, but I don't know how long it's going to be stopped for.
Fooling around? How?
I shoplift.
You do?
Yeah. I've become quite the klepto when things like this happen.
Well, you know, I didn't exactly say that earlier, but I suppose... fooling around with something like that might be something you try to sort of prove the theory.
It's something, it's real easy to do. Like, say, you're in Circuit City and you're looking at the DVDs and things go wiggy.
Yeah.
And you've got a copy of something sitting there in front of you and everything stops. It's like, well, I'll just take this and walk out of the store with it.
In your hand, in the open.
Yeah, right out in the open.
And you claim you've done this, and no alarms went off, nobody chased
nothing.
You. Nothing.
Nothing.
You just walk right out of Circuit City.
Walk right out. I haven't had the guts to knock over a bank yet, because I don't know how long it's going to last.
In other words, you're telling me this can end involuntarily.
I don't control it. It just comes and goes.
Oh, then you're right. It could be awfully dangerous.
So you got to be real careful.
Well, weren't you a little concerned headed for the door of Circuit City with a DVD?
Oh, yeah. It gets real risky. That's why it's a rush.
can you make it happen?
No. It just happens. And I went to the doctor.
You told a doctor about this?
Yeah, I've been going to the VA, to the psychiatrist, since I got out of the Army.
Okie dokie. And what does your doctor say?
Well, they put me under hypnosis to find out if this actually happens, to see, because I wanted to know if I was going crazy or not.
Fair enough, yeah, sure.
And
okay.
they said, well, you believe it's happening. I'm like, okay.
You mean that's actually what they came back with, that yes, you do believe
it? I believe it's happening. My doctor said I believe it's happening. And I'm coming home with stuff and never getting caught. So you never know. I could be lifting people's wallets.
Have you done anything other than short-term profit with it?
Oh, yeah. Back when I was in school, I used to look under girls' dresses and stuff. You know, little harmless things. It's happened all my life. Bad stuff. That's why
it's so nice to know you're out there.
Well, see, that's another thing. I suspect lots of people can do this, and you were talking about invisibility tonight.
Well, have you ever seen the statistics on the amount of theft that stores lose is like a terrible 10 or 20% or something like that? I wonder how much of it is due to people like you.
And I was wondering about that girl that called from Chicago.
Yes.
I was thinking maybe she might have slipped out of time temporarily when that picture was taken involuntarily.
Anything's possible, sir.
And
that's what I've learned. Anything.
I'm sure there's people out there all over the world that can do this and have been doing it. You ever lost your keys or your wallet?
Well, as a matter of fact, now that you mention it, yes.
And can't figure it out?
I always figured it went to a place called the Land of the Lost.
Well, it may be somebody doing what I'm doing.
also documented in a Twilight Zone. You know, that's right. It could be people like you. What a menace. I mean, you have this incredible talent, and what are you doing? You're looking up girls' dresses, and you're taking stuff from Circuit City. Now, that's surely there has got to be. So what is it next? A bank? You're going to try a bank?
No, that's two major leagues. If it decides to peter out on you in the middle of the job, you're in trouble.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what jail could hold you?
Well, that's true.
In the long term.
In the long term,
but
yeah.
You would get a record.
Yeah.
There
they'd
is
know
that.
Who you were. You wouldn't be safe, so.
All right. Well, extremely interesting and somewhat pathetic.
Yeah, it's too bad that one guy couldn't share what all he had done last Friday. I'm sure he's got a lot of stories to tell, too.
No doubt, sir. Thank you very much.
Nice talking to you, Arthur.
And to you. Well, what do you say about that? What a talent, and what a waste of talent, you know, for a DVD demo. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was on.
Yes, you are.
All right, I'm in California.
Yes.
My name is Trace.
Okay.
And I never realized that other people had this thing happen to them about, you know, sitting in front of a mirror.
Oh.
The first time it happened to me, I was 12. And you know the old-fashioned dressing tables?
Oh, sure.
You know, they have the mirrors?
Yeah, of course.
Well, I was sitting there. I was about 12 years old. And, of course, you know, at that age, you're looking at what you can do to your hair and all of that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, it's like I felt this change in energy. It was very strange. And it really kind of frightened me.
12-year-old girls have a lot of energy.
Ah. And I remember hearing this voice, and it wasn't...
Hold it right there. Can you hold on through the
sure.
break? Oh, all right, good. It's a good place to hang everybody up anyway. I remember hearing this voice. That's where we'll pick up. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM, raging through the nighttime, that little slice of invisibility.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Mirrors and invisibility. That seems to be where we're going this night. And to continue with what this investigator, Donna Higbee, has said, she says in our culture, we have sayings like, she looked right through me, they acted like I wasn't there, and so forth. There are several reasons why someone might use that kind of phraseology. There's been the supposition that minorities, and to some extent women, are somehow less in our society. Thankfully, this attitude has been undergoing a change in recent years, but a person who falls into that category, that society is traditionally considered less and important, might take on the stereotyped role and believe this to be true to the extent he or she feels so unimportant that to him, they don't even notice he or she feels invisible. Another reason could be the mental health of the person involved. Severely depressed people can experience what is termed nihilism, or the feeling of such uselessness and worthlessness that they feel invisible to people about them. A person with extremely low self-esteem might feel he or she is unworthy of being noticed, therefore feels invisible in these cases. The feeling of invisibility is a subjective one on the part of the experiencer, not necessarily based in fact. And I think we have all had the experience of a person simply not paying attention to us, not seeing us, or what we're doing. But if we were to go up to them, stand directly in front of them, and speak to them, their attention would be drawn to us, and we'd interact. The phenomena of human, spontaneous, involuntary invisibility is quite different. My research has shown the people to be well-adjusted, well-educated, and taken totally by surprise at the occurrence of invisibility. Often it takes several such occurrences before they realize they're truly invisible during certain times to other people. They attempt to interact with those around them, simply can't be seen nor heard. This produces frustration and, in many cases, a sense of fear at something which they don't understand. There's a big difference between a person purposely not interacting with you because of some cultural or personal reason versus a person not interacting with you because he can neither see nor hear you. Well, all right, back we go, and you are back on the air once again.
All right.
Hi.
Hi. Well, as I said, I was looking in the mirror, and I heard this voice because I was really frightened. But it wasn't like a preteen voice.
Uh-huh.
It was like this adult voice.
Oh?
Saying, I'm not ready for this yet.
Really?
Yes.
In one other case, a young gal earlier said the voice that appeared to her or that she heard in her head was, are you sure you want to proceed, or something like that?
Ah. Uh-huh.
And you heard you're not ready?
It was in the first person. I'm not ready for this yet. And it was just that tone. It's an adult part of my spirit, I guess.
Wow.
So I never had another episode until about 14 years later.
Oh?
And I was getting ready to go out, and I was looking in the mirror, you know, obviously, putting makeup on.
Sure.
And, whoa, I felt the shift again.
What kind of shift? What do you mean?
I felt like my energy was being pulled into the mirror.
Your energy was being pulled into the mirror?
Yes. It's a very strange sensation. That's the only way I can really express it. And I thought, oh, well, okay, let's see. I mean, it wasn't that I was standing in there saying, okay, come on, let's go and let's get this thing going.
So you let it go. What happened?
Yes. Well, I had a past life as an Indian woman, and it went through from when I was born to when I died.
You mean kind of like a movie?
Retrospective? I don't know.
Really?
Yes. But the interesting part of this thing to me is that I had experienced the energy shift prior to looking in the mirror when I was 26. And that was when I was with a friend of mine and my children. And there was no liquor, there were no drugs involved.
Right.
And we had taken the children to an exploratorium. And it was a beautiful summer day out. And she and I were talking, and all of a sudden, I felt that shift. And it kind of startled me because it's as if, well, it's not as if, it's, I could be standing talking to you, but I can feel this energy going somewhere else. And in my mind, I know how I lived and died and what my entire life was. And I finally learned, I think what bothered me the most was that I couldn't control it. I mean, it would just come on me.
Well, that's what I'm hearing. Thank you very much from this article and from so many other people, that it appears to be involuntary. Even that man who did his doings in Circuit City and elsewhere, he said, he warned that it would come and go unexpectedly. Therefore, I guess you couldn't make a career of what he was doing. or at least he wasn't ready for that yet. But in every case, it seems to be involuntary. I suppose you could learn, there must be a way to learn to do that. First time caller line, you're on.
West of the Rockies, call toll free, 1-800-618-8255.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. You're not allowed to give your last name on the air, dear. I'm going to have to bleep that part out. And we'll just say you're Laura. Where are you?
I'm in South Carolina.
Okay, South Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just started recently listening to you. My husband got me listening to you. Back when I was 18, I'm 24 now.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching my aunt's child, and it was dark. It was late at night. We were upstairs, and she's got a window at the bottom of the stairs, and it's high up. It's higher than the trees. You know, at night when the window makes like a mirror effect.
Oh, of course, yes.
Because you got the lights on.
Sure.
Anyway, you know, I was calm. We were playing a game. Wasn't freaked out or nothing. Well, all of a sudden, I just happened to have the feeling to look down at that window. And when I did, I saw like a shadow, like footprints, go from one side of the house to the other.
Huh.
through that window.
Yes.
And I was freaked at that point, so I called my aunt and my grandmother, and they came over and didn't find anything. But I'm wondering, there was a woman that lived in the house with her husband. Her husband decided, for whatever reason, he killed her.
Oh, really?
And I'm wondering if that was her ghost, but I just saw the shadow of her footprints because I didn't see anybody. And nobody was in the house, and the window was too high up for it to be anybody outside.
I wonder if you had been looking directly instead of through that reflection, you would have seen anything at all.
That's what I've always wondered, and they always said, well, you know, you must have got freaked out for whatever reason, but I was calm at the time when I seen it, so afterwards.
No, I'm with you all the way. I hear you. All right, thank you very much. Again, though, I wonder if you had had the ability to see directly as well, whether you would have seen it, or if it was only the reflection or the little dip into the beginning of infinity. That's only the beginning of infinity. I'm still somewhat mesmerized by the gentleman calling about the camera into the monitor. That is a trip into infinity. And the higher resolution you would have, as in HDTV or whatever the next step in technology, the further into, in other words, from a pixel point of view, as the resolution increases, the depth into infinity in which you're traveling increases. Right? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
This is Kat from near San Francisco.
Yes.
I'm surprised at you. You were in Vietnam. Haven't you ever heard the phrase, making yourself invisible?
Yeah, of course. But that's
not a joke.
I know, well...
You know, under combat conditions, and this is particularly true of LERTs, SEALs,
yep.
Rangers, virtually all the SOG units, sometimes you get in a place where you can't really get concealment, and there's pure terror. You want to be invisible.
That's right, yes.
And you are.
Well,
and
sometimes,
after the first,
but then sometimes you're shot, too.
No. Once you do it, a couple of times, three times, then you start learning to do it by pure willing, like the lady in, Tennessee said. And once you get to that point,
yeah, it, wouldn't,
it gets real interesting.
It wouldn't surprise me, but that some people have mastered this cloud, or whatever it is that it takes to initiate this, that they suddenly understand it. Otherwise, it appears to be completely involuntary.
You don't understand it, but you become confident in it. But there's a hang-up. Animals know you're there. Fortunately, a lot of people don't go hunting other people with dogs.
Well, you know what I think then?
What?
Circuit City needs some animals. Thanks for the call, sir. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
I have experimented with both invisibility and working with mirrors. Over the years, yes.
Experimented with it. Why would you begin? How would you even know to begin to experiment with it?
Well, with the mirrors, I started experimenting with that because I had heard my teenage children several years ago talking about Bloody Mary, I think the game that kids used to play, and they'd stand in front of the mirror in the dark and say, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, and spin around 10 times, and then she would appear in the mirror. Well, I snuck off into the bathroom one night to see if it was true.
You say Bloody Mary or you drink 10 Bloody Marys?
you say it.
You say Bloody Mary 10 times.
No, you say it 3 times.
Three times, then spin around 10 times.
Right. Well, let me tell you, I had no success with that because by the time I spun the 5th time, I fell into the bathtub. A little off balance. So I guess it's something just for teenagers. But I had heard several people say different things about that over the years.
Somehow that calls the picture to mind, you know. Bloody Mary, there you go, swinging around, get halfway there and flop into the tub.
I lost my balance and said, wait a minute, this is too painful. So, but I started doing other things over the years, and I would notice sometimes I would catch a glimpse of someone else in the mirror.
Oh.
When I would, you know, just be like walking by a mirror.
I was just going to interject before you go on that perhaps the name for that came from the fact that it originated with an older lady named Mary who tried it and got real bloody.
Falling in the bathtub.
That's right. Anyway, you begin to get serious there and say you have seen images.
Yes.
You've seen
yes.
What?
Exactly. Actually, in the beginning, I didn't know what it was, but it was an older woman. And she looked just like me, except she was old, real old.
Really?
And I would look at it for a minute, and then it would just fade back into myself.
Huh.
And then I started thinking about just trying to see it on my own. And
yeah, but you see, if this is some little tunnel into infinity, infinity may traverse time, and it may well be that you were seeing yourself old.
Yeah, it looked exactly like me, except with long, you know, the same type of hair I have, but with, you know, it was gray and old and, but anyway, the rest of the story is that I started trying to do it on my own without it being an accident.
Right.
And at first I didn't succeed, but then I noticed sometimes I could succeed, and if I would stare into the mirror and, like the other lady said, kind of meditate, I forget exactly how she called it. But then all of a sudden I would see my face start to change.
Yeah, not exactly a concentration, but sort of an altered state.
That's the way she put it, an altered state, yeah. But it's like everything around me would black out in the mirror, except for, you know, me as a human. And then the face would start changing. And you would see like an old man, an Indian girl, a young girl. Different faces would appear.
And you think you're seeing prior lives?
That's the conclusion I came to. But I started experimenting without the mirror, looking into other people's eyes, into their faces.
Yes.
Especially one of my daughters. We tried it together, and she said she could see the things in my face just like I could see the things in her face. So we can see each other change. As we sit across from each other about 3 foot, we can stare into each other's face and see different people come through.
Watch
the faces change.
So
I'm not so sure about the mirror being the key to going into the infinite reality.
Well, I hate to use this analogy because people will jump all over it, but maybe it's like the Ouija board. In other words, the Ouija board is not in it of itself any special magic key to communication with the other side. However, the intent that you place behind what you're doing when you play with the Ouija board may be.
I think it all has to do with intent. That pretty much sums up the mirror experiences that I've had. But I can go and look in the mirror and see things coming up, and I have even called forth things into the mirror and had them come forward.
You've called four things into the mirror.
Yes, when I needed help with something.
Yes.
I was assuming at one point that maybe these were guardians of the past and the future. So when I had a major problem that I couldn't deal with, I would stand in front of the mirror and present the problem.
Yes.
And say, who would like to help me with this?
Boy, isn't that ever so slightly dangerous, though? I mean, who do you know? How do you know who you're making a deal with? Or, you know, just thought I'd throw that in.
Well, that's true of just about anything today, even a stranger on the street. Who do you know what you're dealing with?
Well, a stranger on the street, you're right.
Yeah.
It's about the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
you get a stranger in the mirror, and you really don't know what you've got on your hands.
Right, but, you know, I've only did that once, and where I called and someone volunteered and told me their name, and I told them, you know, to take care of this problem for me,
and
but not to hurt anyone.
And?
The problem was taken care of. It disappeared within 3 days. The problem was completely dealt with. Okay.
Well, I wonder if you made a deal.
No, because I didn't offer anything in exchange.
How do you know?
Because I asked for someone to volunteer
really?
To take care of this problem.
Okie dokie.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Take care. Just a random thought. The problem, she said, got taken care of without anybody getting hurt. I could have asked what the problem was, but I didn't want to know. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Yes.
Yeah, I have something kind of a weird thing that happened to me about a week ago. It was in the morning. I was laying down in my bedroom. I was covered up with a big quilt, and I was awake because I was watching the morning TV. Matter of fact, I was watching that guy that does the readings in the morning, Los Angeles. I'm out of Los Angeles.
Yes.
Anyway, I felt something grab me on the outside of the blanket and squeeze me, was holding me down from the outside of the blanket, literally holding me down. And I heard my son coming. He's 14, and I couldn't yell. I had my eyes open. But when my son see me, I heard him say, Dad, Dad, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And I couldn't speak. And as soon as he touched me, it let go. And I told him, what did you see me doing?
Did it feel like hands holding you?
It felt like a body on top of me, holding me down, and also
a great weight,
and I was telling him.
All right, that comes under the category of an entity attack, sir.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. 1-800-283. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
It sure is. We're talking about people who have had experiences being invisible. We're talking about people who have had experiences with mirrors that go way beyond the norm. And I mean way beyond the norm. Let me tell you what else is going on tonight. The Earth is being bombarded by heavy, very, very heavy solar radiation. As a matter of fact, there are many of you in the northern latitudes who, if you go outside, will observe tonight the northern lights ablazing. The A count is through the roof. The radiation is really hitting Earth big time. There was a full halo event from the sun, and that was headed toward and now is impacting Earth right now. So there's probably various radio blackouts going on, and there's probably northern lights blazing. You might check it out. Get a chance. Back into the night we go. That little slice of invisibility. The night gives you that anyway, doesn't it? But we're talking about something far more concrete here. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing? This is Jeremy from St. Louis, listening to you on KTRS.
The ESO, the monster in the Midwest there.
Yeah, home of George Norrie. We all love him here, and
yes,
you.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, I just had a couple quick stories. One caller brought this memory back to me. I guess I was about 13 or 14. I was at home, and I went to the bathroom, and it was probably late afternoon. I had the light off in the bathroom, so it was kind of a dark, like a dim natural light was coming in. I stopped at the mirror. And I was just kind of struck by the look of the light, and I don't know why, but I just stopped and decided to stare at myself in the mirror. I mean, I hadn't heard anything about mirrors before, and this was a while back. And about a minute or two into it, I was literally just kind of paralyzed, not truly paralyzed, but just really transfixed. And I was looking into my eyes, and I just saw, just like that previous gentleman said, just a whole flurry of just face after face after face. It was
what faces that you recognized or not?
Definitely did not recognize them. But there was something very, I would almost say, intimate about these faces. Not intimate in a way that they just seemed like I would know them. And so obviously everyone would think, well, maybe these were past lives that you're seeing. And I think that's very possible.
It's a good guess.
These faces were very, there's something about them that, I mean, it almost looked, there was a kind of an uncivilized look to some of these faces, and it just made me think of, like, you know, like some pauper or a peasant from 1,000 years ago, and it would switch from male to female to, like, a totally uncivilized runt to some, like, Asian, you know, king or so. I mean, it was just everything totally all across the board, and it was like flip, 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 flip. I was staring into my eyes, and it was like the face around my eyes was just constantly changing. And I was completely, like I said, transfixed. I stopped when my feet were too tired from standing there. I was pretty blown away by
it. How long do you think you were standing there?
Maybe 10 minutes straight of just standing and staring. And not doing anything else but staring. Because I had never seen anything like this before in my life to that time. I mean, these were actual, true, like, hallucinations.
I hear you. For what it's worth, it was a darkened room, but with some natural light getting.
Yeah, it was some natural. It was like a 5 o'clock light coming from outside one window. It was kind of a dark, bluish light. It was really, you know, it wasn't completely dark. I'd say maybe 50% dark.
Would you describe the experience as intriguing, desirable, frightening, what?
Didn't frighten me at all. Definitely intrigued me, and I didn't think there was anything necessarily to be afraid of. I just thought that I had kind of stumbled upon one of those random, rare physical moments where it's just like a key and you're just unlocking something, maybe, you know, something like a strange physical thing that you do that you would normally never do or not have a reason to do, and that somehow unlock the veil, so to speak.
You sound very rational to me.
Well, thank you.
You, how old are you?
I'm 32 now.
How long ago did this occur?
I'd have to say about 15 years ago or more, maybe 17 years ago.
But you remember it vividly.
Oh, completely.
You don't think you've added drama to it or anything else? I mean, this
no,
is the way
no.
it happened.
No, not at all. It was just an event in my life like any other, except that it was very odd, and it was one that, you know, normal reality can't explain under, you know, normal circumstances.
Holy mackerel.
So it was definitely interesting. I had another quick story I just had to tell you about that's a little off the subject, but definitely in a similar vein. It's happened to my cousin. I'll make it quick. He's a guitar player and a songwriter in Nashville. And when he gets ideas, he'll pick up his acoustic guitar and play his little miniature cassette recorder and just put it on his leg and strum a melody.
Right.
And he was just playing a song that he was coming up with, and he does this all the time. He took a moment to put the guitar down before he stopped it, so there was a space at the end where it was completely blank. And he listened to himself playing, and as he got to the end of the guitar playing, he was about to turn it off, and he heard a voice on the recorder, and it was kind of in the background. It was staticky, but he heard a like very irrational sounding voice say, "Get me out of here! Get me out of here! Get me out of here!" You know, like completely freaked out, saying, "Get me out of here! Get me out of here!" And it completely freaked my cousin out.
Yeah, I'm sure it did.
Freaked everybody else out. He put it away for like a month, and then all of a sudden, about a month later, he pulled it out and started listening to it again, and he was really completely compelled to keep listening to it. He was always listening to it. Finally, his wife got it and recorded over it because she said he was just getting
obsessive.
Totally obsessed with it because, I mean, to him, this was like some kind of real proof, you know, of you know, non-physical reality to him. And he never really gave it a passing thought before.
Yeah, I know.
And then all of a sudden, it's a personality speaking out to him.
When it happens to you, it's a whole new world. All right, sir, thank you very, very much. I appreciate the story as well. You know, he may have heard an EVP. We've talked a lot on this program about electronic voice phenomena, and I am convinced it is real. I'm not convinced that I know what it is. I'm convinced it's real, but I sure don't know what it is. And I can see how somebody would get compelled to have a sudden understanding that there is another reality. There's another place, and there are consciousnesses occupying this place. That could get you pretty involved pretty quickly, even obsessive. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi, this is Jenny.
Hello, Jenny.
I'm calling from Chicago.
Boy, Chicago.
Of us tonight.
No kidding.
I think it was the electrical storm we had tonight.
You had a pretty good. I heard there was quite a bit of action going on in the Midwest.
Yeah, it was really beautiful, actually. It lit up the whole sky.
Uh huh.
But I'm calling about the invisible guy at the presidential inauguration.
Oh, yes.
I work at a film archive.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. And I was going to volunteer to watch it.
Can you get hold of that footage?
Oh, sure.
You have the footage.
Sure we do.
So then you could really go frame by frame.
Exactly.
You could look for this guy to appear. And how could he get past the, you know, the guards and the
exactly.
Secret Service and all the rest of it? The Secret Service was really embarrassed about that.
Oh, I bet. That's a pretty big flaw there.
So you really are volunteering to go through this? And
sure. You said it was at, like, the... I never heard about it, so it was at the Clinton inauguration and the Bush inauguration?
You know, they did a whole big deal on this. As a matter of fact, they had this man on Crossfire and programs like Crossfire.
Wow.
And he did claim that he could become invisible, and that's how he did it. So, yeah, take a shot for us, would you?
Sure. You don't happen to know, like, what part of it would be in, because it's, like, 3 or 4 hours long. Like, any clue?
Oh,
like...
I hear you. No, I personally don't.
Okay.
Let's try and get that from somebody in the audience.
Okay.
Where that was in the ceremony, so you could look.
That sounds good.
Okay, you got
it. Should I call you back or give you an email? Or...
My email address is artbell@mindspring.com.
Okay.
Or AOL.com, either one.
All right, great.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Ooh, somebody willing to actually go frame by frame. All right, then we're going to need a little bit of help. Is there anybody out there who knows offhand in the stock footage, which she can get hold of, of the inaugural, where and about when in all of that, that occurred. And I suppose for her in her investigation, it would be perhaps worthwhile if you can go to or get an archive of, say, Crossfire that did a program on that and had the man. Then you'd have his face, which you would need for a reference, right? Invisibility. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. Hi, Art.
Hi.
I'm talking about invisibility.
Okay.
And I'm actually devoting my life to cracking the code on this one because it's been a feature of my life.
You know, and this is just not something you would think you could do an entire radio program on, and yet here we are.
I have a theory about that, too. I think, I mean, all our planets are in alignment. I'm calling from Toronto, by the way.
Yes.
And we're in troubled times, and the bottom line for me, if there's nothing else to know about this phenomena of leaving the body, of leaving time and space, of going backwards or forwards, of disappearing, it's really, the bottom line to me is that the body is material, but it's not who we are. And I'm not a religious person, I don't take drugs or drink or anything, but it's, whatever, I mean, we are infinite, but not in the mirror sense. I mean, I know the image that you're talking about, but that is the same image that's just repeated over and over and over. In fact, in our spirit form, we have so many variables,
but you know,
and we are infinite.
But you know, the man is right. When you take a camera
and
you get close to a monitor, especially a high-definition monitor, I've done it, and you get close enough, you zoom all the way in, then you're looking down this long, incredible tunnel. Now, obviously, with today's technology, we can't get to infinity. In other words, we get down to the smallest pixels, and then to our eyes, it disappears.
Mm-hmm.
But, in fact, it keeps going. It really is infinite. So the higher resolution we get, the further down the road of infinity we can go.
Well, I've been leaving my body and traveling, and these voices inside the people have been talking about, this has been, like, from the time I've been a child, it's been a very familiar thing. And I've learned over time that it can be a protective mechanism. It's something that controls me rather than me controlling it. But I can tell you sometimes I can control it, and I can tell you what it feels like when I've gone. If I'm like just like awake, I'm not asleep, but I'm talking to you, and then I'm gone. I don't feel myself leaving, but I feel myself coming back, and it's like being in an elevator, and when the elevator just suddenly drops, and you're like boom, your gravity's taking your head to your bottom of your feet.
We all know what that feels like.
And that's what it feels like. And then I'm sitting in front of you, and you're moving your mouth, and you're talking, and you haven't even noticed I've been somewhere else, and I can't tell you where I've been, and I have no idea what you're saying. So it's weird in that respect. But
well,
also,
okay, well, we'll have to hold it there. But that's a very interesting way to describe it. I'm always looking to try and understand what it really feels like and getting words that will describe it. And she described the elevator falling. You know that feeling, right? That just a little change in gravity and you go like that. And that's exactly when she says it occurs. A very, very interesting. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Doing okay, sir. Where are you?
In East Texas tonight.
East Texas, okay.
Yes. Just real quick background lead into the story. Retired Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel.
Yes, sir.
And Annapolis graduate as well. And the first assignment was 22 Area Camp Pendleton with Air Delivery Unit, first air delivery. And airborne, no scuba training, but later got transferred into recon section and got scuba training. While I was in Okinawa at SWAB, I was detached to, if you're familiar with Fatima, Marine Corps Air Station.
Oh, of course.
I was working there doing rescue swim work, rescue diving work on weekends.
Right.
For people that were lost in currents.
Sure.
All type of emergencies, and worked with the Navy crew as well. And met a young individual as a Navy lieutenant, and later as our careers developed, stayed friends. He became a lieutenant commander. and was with a DSRV unit.
Well, we had nothing but water around. I mean, the Pacific on one side and the East China Sea on the other, so it was all water.
Plenty of water, warm water, cold water. You got it all right there where it merges.
Right.
But a lot of activity down at aircraft. You know, you get surfers, swimmers lost in currents. But the background I was trying to get to is the friendship I made later came back that I was assigned or requested to join this DSRV unit and did. And was reassigned to Virginia. And basically what we did was deep sea rescue and recovery. If we had a downed aircraft, we would go and try to rig the craft to get it back. Anything, any anomaly that we wanted to look at, basically we were sent. There were several teams that did the same thing we did.
How deep did you go?
We could go 2 miles, excess of 2 miles. You're pretty much pushing it. This particular incident I wanted to tell you about was
over,
about a mile.
So you're saying you could go over 10,000 feet?
Yes.
Wow. All right, anyway, go ahead.
Well, so the particular incident we were involved in, we were just under a mile and a half of water, North Atlantic. What had happened, they had picked up there's a survey vehicle working the North Atlantic that had picked up some radioactive signal. And what they did was sent a vessel around with a side scan, picked up that there was a vessel on the bottom. They thought first possibly a submarine that had some kind of problem there, not ours, obviously.
Yes, sir.
We would have been in communication. The vessel came back. It was much too small, any sub that they were familiar with. And at that time, we came on site.
But you were getting some kind of nuclear signature from it.
Right, there's residual radiation from it.
Uh-huh.
And the concern was it a weapon, some type of concealed weapon source, or was it actually a power source?
Right.
And we were brought out from Virginia, steamed out. And not to give you specific minutes, seconds, location, just approximately 250 miles out of Aberdeen, Scotland, is where we were. And you can draw a circle and narrow it down pretty quick. Yeah. At that depth, you can limit the waters.
Yes, sir.
But upon diving, we went down, like I say, just under a mile and a half, and we contacted the vessel, which we immediately recognized not as a submarine, but more of an aircraft. Of communications back to the top, we were told to go observe, photograph, determine what we have. We thought at that point we had possibly a Russian or Korean aircraft with some type of contained weapon source. So
okay.
As we went in.
Yeah, that would be logical.
We went in, and this particular vessel was partially in the mud, submerged or buried under some mud, had been there for some period of time.
And how much were you, what were you seeing of it? What shape?
What we saw was the, I would say the rear two-thirds. It was a triangular shape. It was wedged more.
Triangular.
Triangular shape. And best way I could describe it, it would be nosed in with about two-thirds exposed to the back.
Yes, sir.
And as you come out the triangular shape, at the back it was rounded as it came to the corner, what would be the corner of the triangle. They were rounded on both sides and
oh,
they were flat
my.
Across.
Oh, really?
And this...
obviously not a conventional aircraft.
Well, one comment was made in the DSRV to the lieutenant commander, who's also a good friend, was my comment was, I don't believe it's Russian. And his comment was, if it is, it's not Russia right now, you know, joking. And the best way I can describe it, it was a charcoal gray in color. It had some markings on the side.
Sir,
and, you know,
sir, listen, I'm coming to a break at the top of the hour. Can you manage to hold on?
I can if you'd like, yes.
I would like, yes. Stay right there, all right?
I will.
Okay. Recovered from a mile and a half below the ocean surface. Would I like to hold on? Yes, I think I would.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop
children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going
in the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
It certainly is. Good morning, everybody. This is Art Bell. Let's go directly back to our caller and hold our break. Caller, you say you were about a mile and a half down, right?
Just under a mile and a half, right?
A mile and a half down, and you located this craft, which was triangular in shape, and you were seeing the back portion of it.
Right. At this point, we'd come over almost what I would best describe as broadside to the craft. The nose, what I would determine as the nose end, was submerged in mud.
And what was your ship? What were you in?
It's a DSRV. It's a
no, DC. I understand, but the DSRV had to be deployed from something, right?
Right. It's best thing I could describe. It's like a LPH type vessel where you have a recovery at water level, and then it has a platform for helicopters.
Gotcha.
We have a lot of visitation and traffic, and
gotcha.
On this particular dive, we had more than normal. I'll get to that real quick. Basically, our mission was to locate, identify what it was and whose it was, and determine how hot it was as far as radiation source.
Right.
If it was something we were going to rig to recover, or we'd have to get authorization to destroy, essentially, if it was something that was too hot to recover.
Yes.
And what we came upon the site, and as I said, it was a triangular shape, but the best description I can give is the back end was more of an ellipse around.
Uh-huh.
And it had a round corner where it attached to the straits, which would be the side or would appear to be the side. And there were markings on the side of it, which were in the skin itself.
And how would you describe those markings?
And I've heard this before. People try to say hieroglyphics and all of this. It was not any language or marking which we would typically see, Russian, Arabic, nothing we were trained or had seen previously.
But hieroglyphic like.
Well, I'll say hieroglyphic like, but more geometric patterns. There weren't large walking individuals with bird heads, and when I think of hieroglyphics, I think of individuals with a head like a bird or a wolf, and then human body. Just didn't have those type of patterns. It was more geometric shapes, but you could tell some of the actual characters repeated. Quite a bit of it was in mud, and then there would be gaps where out of mud, but you could see some repeating of the character.
At some point in this much observation, at some point here, somebody must have begun to think not of this earth.
Well, not thinking out loud. You know, our training is such that we're going to go through the entire process, and we've got a computer that carries every schematic of everybody's aircraft, everybody's waterborne vessel on the planet, essentially. We can put the shapes in. We can match it. We didn't get a match, to put it as simple as I can. There wasn't a match for the marking or the pattern or the shape. So at this point, we contacted the surface vehicle. We were ordered to return to the surface with the existing still photography and video we had, several million candle powers of light. You understand the darkness at this depth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we returned to the surface, and essentially they download the pictures, the video. They went through the process, and we were held up for an additional 12 hours about a marine archaeologist. And we took the marine archaeologist down on the second dive. And, again, a lot of drawings made. He was making some sketches, had some information within his own computer.
Sir, let me interrupt you and ask you, what was your job description in all of this? What were you doing?
My job description was to operate various equipment, mainly computer equipment that stored the information. I was trained mainly for the recognition side, and then on the rigging, I did operation of the mechanical side, mechanical arms, and devices that would be manual rigging for inflation recovery, that type.
Okay, so you were part of the crew, and you were part of the analysis.
Part of the crew more than the analysis. We had individuals.
Okay, excuse me. You didn't actually personally go down, or did you?
Yes, I was in the.
You were
in the DSRV.
You were actually in the DSRV.
Yes, and in the normal function or my role on that crew is to operate the. There's some mechanical arms that we will operate for rigging.
Right.
And at this time, I was a captain in the Marine Corps. This was 10 years prior to when I retired. So.
About what
year? About halfway in my career. This is 91.
91.
Early summer of 1991.
All right.
And,
at some point, I mean, my God, you see something that looks not of this earth with the marks that as you probably well know, the kind of thing that we believe we saw at Roswell. So somebody has to be thinking, hey, maybe alien crashed vehicle of some kind or not of this earth. I mean, that would be...
That conversation was going on in the vehicle, yes.
Yeah, I thought
so. Not relayed via radio to the surface for a number of reasons, but, we don't want to be immediately brought to the surface for psych evaluation. Intercept of the communication was another concern, just on conversation within the vehicle.
Right.
So the main purpose, at least the first trip, was to get video of what we had still, because we couldn't give them a direct match from anything we had in the computer system. There was not a direct match, at least of that part of the vessel.
Once again, I'm going to ask you to hold on, all right?
Sure.
Stand by for just a moment. This one I can't let go of. We'll be right back. All right, here we go again. A Marine captain, welcome back, sir. Well, now ex-Marine captain.
Well, actually ex-Lieutenant Colonel. I did a little better the last 10 years, but...
All right, Colonel.
Still, like I said, at the time, it was Captain at the time.
At the time. All right, so, Captain, where did this go from there? I mean, now you've got this thing ID'd. Were you suddenly out of the picture, or...?
Well, we're in the picture up to the point where we're rigging and recovering. As I said, we took down a Marine archaeologist. And one thing that was very interesting that this individual, we actually monitored currents, did some things, temperatures and such at the site. He was making quite a bit of notes and, really not making a lot of comment, but he did make the comment when we asked, is this recent? So there was no disturbed area around it, best way to describe it. It looked like it had been in place. And he said that it wasn't any more recent than at least 30 to 40 years, which really threw us back because this thing looked like something beyond, where we're at development-wise, aircraft. And I still hadn't ruled out that it was not experimental aircraft at this point, someone's. But the point that he made that the buildup of the silt mud in the front end would appear that this has probably been in place for a period of 30 years or somewhere in the range, 30 to 40 years.
And you have, was there an attempt made at recovery?
There was a recovery made, not an attempt made. There was a recovery made of the craft.
What do you know about that?
Well, I know firsthand of that because what we were instructed to do, again, this is about the fourth time down. We're in the third day, and we were using thrusters to remove some of the silt mud from the midsections where we could attach equipment we had or get equipment to attach to try to lift this up. And the problem, again, is we have all types of procedures. We know if it's a particular MiG model, what the weight of that vehicle is going to be, if it's under seawater, if it's full of seawater. We estimate the lift we're going to need to get that vessel moving.
Right.
And the best we could do was go on size and approximate it to the closest known aircraft, which basically this thing was close to our own F-14, if you want to get a physical dimension of what this thing size-wise. So what we rigged it for was enough lift to get that weight. We had thrusted away a lot of the silt and mud from the vehicle. Still had a section, probably about 8 foot, that was trapped or under a depth. It was more of an angle to it. So when we rigged it to bring it up rear first, use the best language I can, we were going to try to lift the rear end up and bring this thing up on an angle and try to keep everything intact and go.
Yes, sir.
We're rigging at the with our calculation for the rigging, the weights, brought it up, and it went probably about 2.5 to 3 times the ascent as what we anticipated, which immediately gave us the feel that we're dealing with something extremely light.
That you had miscalculated the probable weight.
I'd say we didn't miscalculate. We calculated it based on known aluminums, magnesium.
I understand. I understand.
And got a little more ascent than what we anticipated. The vehicle was recovered, and within 4 hours, everyone was off the site. I mean, everyone was steamed out of the site from the point of recovery. That was the last last of that vehicle, or my personal experience with the vehicle from that point. No other feedback, no other debriefing as to what the vehicle was.
What about any warnings about talking about what you had just done?
Nothing at all.
Nothing.
Our whole mission, the whole, we did things, brought up aircraft that didn't belong to us, brought up things, or made dives on things that weren't ours. We pretty much, that was an assumption any time we were out.
Well,
if it was our vehicle, we weren't allowed to discuss.
When you got this vehicle up, was it obvious in any way? Was it obvious that it was not of this earth, or at least nothing that you had wonderful records of everything that was, or at least known of at that time?
Right. There would be nothing cataloged as of 91 that, I would say as of 91, and still as of 2001, being familiar with current aircraft that it is even vaguely familiar with. There's not a cockpit to the vessel. It was a solid metallic form. When that part was removed from below the mud, the silt, and finally got to see, we trailed it as it ascended. We trailed up to follow the vessel, make sure we didn't lose any equipment en route and have to do another recovery of the vessel, because that happens on occasion. We will lose it.
Sure.
When you initially move it. But this, it had no type of cockpit or no type of window. It was just a skin. It was all metallic. And the markings went from the midsection of the craft completely around 360. It wasn't a circular pattern, but if you say the perimeter,
was it aerodynamic in the sense that We understand.
It was aerodynamic in the sense that it was triangular, and it was if the nose was flat, it did have an aerodynamic shape. It not only went up, I would describe it as a porpoise head. If you go from the snout of the porpoise, it had the same pattern on the bottom. It was almost a perfect symmetric piece of metal with the marking around the edge, and it was just a triangular shape, but no glass, nothing that would appear to be a hatch or a cockpit of any type.
Wow.
So that's, that again, it's just...
Did you confirm its size when it came up as being roughly the size of, say, an F-14?
Right. It was a little bit, actually a little bit longer.
Longer.
Than the aircraft would be. Probably 6 to 8 feet, I would say, in excess of what you would anticipate for F-14.
Well, Colonel, a straight-out question is, do you believe that you recovered an alien craft?
I've never, you know, I've had conversations with the individual, my friend that actually was there. We're still in contact quite often. I can't definitively say that it was. I can only say that it was an object that didn't belong there and certainly would not have belonged there 30 or 40 years prior to when we were on site. And no visible means of, you know, if you anticipate it was an aircraft and I saw a cockpit, I would say it was definitely somebody's here that was in development. But technology would not allow you to fly such a craft 30, 40 years ago without some type of visual.
Did you ever, and I don't suppose you did, get feedback on any of the missions like that one?
Once the recovery is over, we were not involved in not only this vehicle, any vehicle, and some were quite obvious. We recovered some Korean aircraft. We've never heard back. Once they're recovered, they're taken for analysis. We're not no longer involved in
gotcha.
The process.
Yeah, you did your job. All right.
We have one job.
You say you're still in communication with some of the people who were on the same job with you.
Right. The one lieutenant commander and I are still very much in communication.
And what does he think? What conclusions? I mean, what is when you're sitting around having a beer or something and you're talking, what does he think you brought up?
He believes that it was something extraterrestrial. He very much firmly believes that it was. And there was one other individual on the original dive. It was a weapons officer. He immediately was of that belief. He's the one that kind of started that conversation with him.
Can you put me in touch with either one of those people?
I can put you in touch with the pilot of our craft. The lieutenant commander that was actually
piloted
the DSRV.
Do you believe he would talk about it?
Oh, I think he would love to. I have no doubt that he would be glad to express his views because he has at a number of reunions that we have and golf outings we do. It's always a topic.
All right. All I can do is you're obviously out there somewhere on a cell phone, right?
Right.
Do you think you're violating any security oaths or anything else by what you're telling me?
No, because initially when we were in this business, you know, we were basically given 7 years. We're not supposed to have any conversation, you know, even amongst ourselves, supposedly, for 7 years. But this has been ongoing since that day. We talk about other jobs, other missions that we made also, but basically for a seven-year period not to discuss. And not having, like I say, we don't have the video, we don't have the stills.
Yes, but you have each other.
We got some sketches that this individual did, the lieutenant commander did for his own.
Do you have those?
He has those. I can get those as well if you'd like.
I would like.
Yeah, he did a series of sketches that he maintained for the balance of his career and still has in his possession. And these were sketches that he did. He started immediately when we were steaming back to Virginia. He was in the process of working up various drawings at different stages of the recovery.
What is your first name?
My first name is Mark.
Mark. Mark, what I'd like you to do as we head into the break here is hang on the line, and I'm going to come and get a contact number for you privately, all right?
Sure.
Okay, Mark, hold tight. All right, and that's exactly what we're going to do well. Down to 10,000 feet below the surface, but at about a mile and a half, Mark and two others found what to me sounds very much like an alien craft. And so I think the next logical step, having heard what we all just did, is to get a number and get hold of one or both of the other parties and proceed. What do you think?
The Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Well, this kind of talk radio, you just never know what's going to happen. And that was an ideal example of that. You never know what you're going to just run into, like a bomb going off. And that's just kind of like what that was. I have the lieutenant commander's name. They've got sketches. The lieutenant commander is willing to come on the air. Doesn't get much better than that. So, depend on the fact that I will follow up, and we'll probably be interviewing that lieutenant commander, assuming that he's willing to talk, and certainly Mark thought so. So, seems to me the next logical step, I will follow up. Once again, back into the wild night. And I mean wild. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
How are you tonight?
I'm okay. Fascinated.
Oh, good. I've got one quick little note I have is on your visibility thing. Perhaps what you're doing with the cop was opposite invisibility. Where you actually drew attention to yourself instead of making yourself invisible.
Yeah, but I thought, and most times, wouldn't you think it would be all right to just, you know, just inch past the cop. Yeah, he's doing this.
Come on, right?
But you're literally just crawling past him. But and so he's just watching this. Dum, 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 dum. Finally, you get past him, and he flips on the lights, and oh man.
Yeah, oh boy. You know, but I do have a quick invisibility story for you.
Oh.
Yeah, about I guess it's about 10 years ago. My neighbor girl. I'm married. My neighbor girl used to come over. We always went swimming at night. You know, late at night, and she had a really possessive boyfriend that used to, you know, he would, like, stalk her almost. And on this one particular evening, it was a full moon out, and we were in the pool, you know, swimming around, no lights on other than the moonlight.
Yeah.
And we see him sneak into her backyard.
Oh, great.
Right next door.
Yeah.
And so she ducks behind the pool, And I'm standing up facing the guy. He's probably, oh, maybe at that point, maybe 20 feet away. So I walk, I figure, you know, where he sees me, you know. So I walk up within 4 feet of the guy, and I say hello to him. You know, I'll just say his name is Bob. I said, hi, Bob. And he looks right through me. Like I'm, and he looks around, and he nothing. He doesn't see me.
This may have been angelic intervention.
Yeah, it might have been. It might have been.
But he really couldn't see you.
No, not absolutely not. And we joke about it even to this day. And we're still amazed at the fact that, you know, he never spotted myself or her. You know, it was like he looked right through us and we weren't even there.
That's really weird. And you knew he was looking for the two of you.
Well, he was looking for her mainly.
For her, yeah.
And he was, like, peeping in their back window and stuff. And he had gotten down off of there. And we were, like, honest to gosh, we were, like, 4 feet away from each other, eye to eye, and nothing.
It may have had to do with intent.
Maybe he was so focused.
Your intent.
Oh, either that or he was so focused on you know.
On her that he couldn't see you?
Well, yeah, but boy, how can you miss somebody 4 feet away? You know, call you by name and look eye to eye.
It's a good story.
So, you know, another thing with the cops, too, is the fact that that lady brings up a good point about that, that I've, you know, knocked on wood.
Oh, you too?
Yeah, yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've been zooming down the highway 70, 80 miles an hour past a cop before I realize it and look in my rearview mirror and they never move. You know, now either they're sleeping, didn't notice, weren't clocking. Maybe I'm just lucky. I don't know.
Well, some of the above are possible, but on a regular basis. And the other interesting thing you'll recall she said was, if she didn't notice it, in other words, if it escaped her attention, if she didn't have the opportunity to concentrate or create this condition, then she has been caught.
That's true. I can also seem to sense radar whenever it's around for some strange reason.
Really?
It's like a sixth sense.
Oh, I can do that.
Can you do that?
But I have the Valentine 1 radar detectors.
No, I don't have that luck.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Art.
Take care. I had to resort to that, you know, radar detectors. Those are really good ones, and they can see way past the horizon. So I can't personally detect it, but I do that with the machine very well, very handily. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Good morning, sir. Where are you?
I'm in North Hollywood. I happened to call in late last Friday's program.
Oh, really? And yes. Here you are again.
Yes. I've been listening to the tonight's program. I just wanted to make a distinction for your listeners. My experience is not intentional because I moved in to this house where the previous owners had left the mirror. So I'm not wanting to see these things that are happening in front of the mirror.
What kind of things?
Well, I had mentioned where, like, I had been cleaning the mirror with a cloth. And I have to, the thing is I had to move the mirrors because I had two of them. Remember I had mentioned where I had two on opposing walls?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So, and last week I decided I had enough, so I just basically moved one mirror so it wasn't facing the other.
Right.
Once I've done that, I've started to hear whistling. And the whistling, my dogs are sometimes growling before I can hear it.
Maybe somebody's pissed that you moved the mirror.
Well, I think that to make a distinction also that some mirrors, I would think some people would have to realize that some of these, some not all mirrors, but I believe that some mirrors, it's almost like I don't even want to be undressed in front of it. It's like you're being watched. It's like it's not.
Maybe you are being watched.
Well, it could be like
that instinct is very strong. You know when there's somebody in the room with you. That's one of the senses that humans share with animals. We know when there's somebody near us. We can sense it.
Right. The other thing I wanted to mention was that I think that the same thing can occur with reflections in a pond or in a lake, because I've also had experience when I was a kid when I was in front of a lake and saw two figures behind me, but I couldn't see them because it was like in the nighttime shadows.
Well, of course, you're correct. There have been stories, haven't there, of reflections in the water.
Right. So I think that the reflection part of it, aspect of, like with the mirror, can also occur in bodies of water, even a swimming pool.
Even a swimming pool. It makes absolute sense to me, sir. Yeah, so the answer is the reflectivity, or you could call it feedback. It's feedback, right?
Right, and not everyone is wanting to experience these things. Some of it's like, if the mirror wasn't that heavy, I just would pick it up and put it in the closet, but I'd have to get somebody to help me do that. It's just a very heavy old mirror, but now at the point I'm ready to do that, it's just put it in storage and cover it, because the whistling that I'm hearing is evidently emanating from the mirror, and it's like at the odd hours of beyond 12 midnight. And I could go to sleep early, and then in the middle of the night we'll hear some type of whistling, very faint whistlings, but the dogs will begin to growl first. They'll hear it before I do.
That's not good.
No, it isn't.
Dogs growling, you know, dogs know something evil this way comes, and they don't growl for no reason.
And I hear the whistling, but it's like...
If I were you, I'd be sending the mirror to Cincinnati.
Probably, or finding someone to buy it for me, because it's such a really nice one, but...
Well, oh, sure. Sell somebody else your problem.
So not everyone that's experiencing these things are intentionally sitting in front of a mirror wanting things to happen or see.
Your point is well made, and it kind of cozies up very well with this lady's research, Donna Higby, that I've been reading about tonight. I'm going to obviously try and pursue her as a guest, but she's doing deep research in these areas, and in almost every case she has cited and documented, it's all been involuntary.
Right.
So, your story sounds right. Telling you, Cincinnati.
When are you going to have Evelyn Paglini again?
Oh, I'll have her soon. Evelyn always comes back.
I look forward to hearing from you.
All right,
again.
Sir. Take care. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Mr. Bell.
Yes, that would be me.
Thank you very much. I love your show.
Thank you.
Amazing. Actually, those Pele rocks from the islands, you got to send those back, too.
Oh, what rocks now?
The lava rocks from Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. I'm told that you cannot take them off the island if you do bad, very, very bad luck.
Yeah, I actually had a friend bring me one once. And
what kind of friend is that?
He thought he was going to bring me back a tiki idol, but that's not my story, actually. But he brought me this rock.
Okay, go ahead then.
But I was actually in Honolulu, and that's where the story takes place. I was... due to fly back to the mainland about 2 days. And some friends and I decided to jump the Maui real quick. And we got there, and pretty much I wasn't keeping an eye on the bank account. So when we got back to the Maui airport to fly back so I could catch my flight, my credit card was maxed out. So I just read this book called The Bourne Identity, and I thought I'd just shadow someone onto the plane. And so I tried it. I was feeling pretty bold.
You just sort of got behind somebody and walked?
Right.
And
tried to fall into his shadow.
Yeah, I hear you. And what happened?
Well, I actually stepped a little out of place, and I saw the stewardess, and she saw me.
But you had almost made it?
I did make it. I made it onto the plane.
You made it onto the plane?
Yes. And I couldn't believe what happened, you know. I was just sitting there in the seat. I just picked the seat, you know, and just sat down. I was like, whoa, I can't believe I just did that.
Boy, that takes real gigantic, monstrous cojones.
Well, I was a crazy skier back in those days, so it was fun, you know. Just
yeah, you know, if you were to do something like that these days... You would be interviewed for hours by the FBI, the CIA. Listen. So do you think...
What's that? I'm sorry?
Do you think you became virtually invisible?
I truly do. It felt like I was, you know.
Have you ever tried it again or anything like that?
No, it'd have to be the right circumstance.
That's incredible. That's really incredible. So you successfully boarded a plane, took a flight, found a seat.
I landed before my friends, too.
Incredible. All right. I appreciate the story, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. Oh, wow. Can you imagine that? You get behind somebody. And you get, he said in their shadow, but obviously he had he was able to become invisible, found a seat, took a flight. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Tom from Philly, outside of Philly, WPHT, the big talker, 12 to 10 a.m.
That's right.
Couple quick hits.
All right.
First of all, about the mirrors, Gary Shandling once said that he had something that said, "The mirror over my bed reads, objects appear larger than they are." But anyway, the great Colin Wilson, I don't know if he was on your show, Art, or one of your cohorts, but you should get him on. I have had an interest in mirrors for years, and every book I read, I will index it myself.
Well, you've heard a multitude of stories tonight. Some of them sounded absolutely straight on to me.
Mm-hmm. Let me read you one quote from Colin Wilson.
Okay.
"How is it possible for people to go through life without seriously thinking of certain questions? The answer is, again, disturbing because the thoughts are tied down too much to familiar things." And then he gets into, you realize this, if you try to think about some fairly simple abstract problem, such as why a mirror reverses your left and right sides, but not your head and feet. The mind tries to grasp the problem, then skids like a car on ice. It's as if some gravitational force pulled your mind back to the near and now, and the ground pulls us back where we jump, when we jump. Another thing that he said was, suppose I'm looking at myself in a full-length mirror while on the other side of the room another person watches me.
Yes.
I look at myself and say, that is me. Then I experience a momentary dizziness and suddenly find I am now looking out from behind the eyes of the other person, while the former me, in quotes, stands on the other side of the room, looking in a mirror. What would this experience teach me? Clearly, that I was mistaken to say, that is me. For the real me, in quotes, is something that is transferable from one body to another. And then the final thing from Colin Wilson. He's talking about Caspar Hauser, the person who appeared from nowhere. And he's talking about a mysterious letter, if it was written in mirror writing. Was it because Caspar wrote it with his left hand, looking in a mirror, in order to disguise his writing? It is a well-known fact that it is easy to train the left hand to write backward using a mirror.
That is true.
So I just wanted to lay that on you because I think that you have to delve deeper, as I'm sure you're going to, into the whole mirror phenomenon.
It sure looks that way.
And I'm going to start getting my edited books out for you.
All right. Thank you, my friend. And take care. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello.
Hi, is it me, Art?
It is. Well, only you know that for certain, but it sounds like you, yes.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I've called to give you a mirror story.
Okay, fire away.
Well, about 18 years ago, I had a dream. And I had a dream where there was a woman in the dream, and I felt very connected to her. And I reached out and I touched her. Now, I'm not going to go into the dream because that's not really the story, but about 2 months ago, I was doing stuff in the bathroom and I looked in the mirror and all of a sudden I recognized the woman.
From the dream?
From the dream. But the woman was actually me from 18 years ago. I mean, well, now I look like that woman. I don't know if I'm making myself clear. I actually dreamt about myself at the age I am now.
At what age did you have the dream?
I was about 26, I think, at the time.
And you are now?
I'm almost 40.
And you're almost 40. So,
yeah, so what's
at
the fight? 20,
at 26, you saw yourself
in a dream.
In a dream as 40.
As 40.
And then later in the mirror.
Right, I saw myself. I looked and I recognized the woman from the dream. And it was me. So the strange thing was, as I reached out to touch the mirror, I was so fascinated by this realization. And when I touched the mirror, I actually saw the younger me.
That is so freaky.
So the vision that I saw, or the reflection in the mirror at the time that I touched it
2 months ago was the young me.
God, I've got to ask, I mean, how did you take all this? I mean, just in stride, or did the hairs on the back of your neck
stand? It was actually very big. I began to cry, and I actually had a memory that I couldn't remember in the dream. The dream was very impactful when I had it, and it had a lot of meaning for me. But there was bits of it I couldn't remember, and there was a piece that came back.
Did you, at the time of the dream, understand? Or only when you saw it in the mirror?
Only when I saw it in the mirror. I didn't know it was me at the time.
Huh.
I knew I had a strong connection to her. You know, the woman in the dream was, that gets very personal. She was very bound, and I do feel kind of bound in my life, stuck in my life right now. And so I saw myself in the place that I am on an emotional feeling level.
Boy, I hate to say it, but that's really creepy.
Well, you know, it might be really creepy, but at the same time, it was very impactful. It was very impactful 2 months ago, me coming to this realization that I did see myself as being where I am today, which was very interesting.
Would you want to see another vision of yourself, say, an equal distant time from now? Or would you be afraid of that?
I don't think I would be afraid of that. I mean, I wasn't afraid of it at the time. Though, like I said, Art, at that time, I had no idea it was me. I felt connected to me. You also have to understand, at the time, I was blonde. And when I grew up until the age of about 26, I had long blonde hair. And then I cut off all my hair. And
why do women do that?
I don't know why we do that. But I did, and it's grown back dark. So the woman in the dream was dark-headed. And
holy mackerel.
I didn't have any connection to that. But, you know, so not until just a couple of months ago did I go, wow, that was me.
So you actually went from a true blonde?
True blonde. You know, I was platinum, and then I'm dark. Well, you know, it's not really, really brown, but it's pretty brown now. Yeah. Matter of fact, I still have this relationship to myself that I'm a blonde, but I'm not. I'm not blonde anymore.
There's still some blondeness inside of you. Once a blonde, always a blonde, somewhere
well,
down there.
Thanks for letting me share, Art.
Well, listen, thanks for sharing.
Bye.
Later. That's the boy, oh boy, what a program, huh? This one I'll remember for a while. Will I follow up with Mark? You bet. Listen, that's it. What a week from the high desert. And next week ought to be very good. And then the week after that, by the way, for those who have been asking, yes, Nancy Sinatra will be on the show. We'll have her on for an hour regarding all the music of hers that I play and some new music that she's got as well. She'll be on. That'll be a week from Monday. Next week, a great week coming up. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Night-night.